This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Hope you had a great weekend. Kevin Gallagher producing. The numbers to call if you're locally dialing, 297-5633 outside the area, 877-217-5757. You may also reach us by email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Saturday, Charles Bustani, the congressman from Lafayette, defeated his Republican incumbent as well, Jeff Landry. They were forced into the same district because Louisiana lost a seat due to dwindling population. 61-39%, Bustani won over Landry and returns for another 2 years on Capitol Hill in one of the most expensive congressional races of all time, Charles Bustani winning, going away over Jeff Landry. And in the Supreme Court race that affects the Baton Rouge area, John Michael Guidry lost to Jeff Hughes. The Democrat Guidry was defeated 53-47%, about 5,680 votes separating the two men. But Guidry won handily in East Baton Rouge Parish. He also won in West Baton Rouge Parish, West Feliciana, East Feliciana, and Iberville Parishes. But Jeff Hughes, on his home turf of Livingston, defeated Guidry by almost 11,000 votes in Livingston Parish, and that proved to be the district. The difference in the district in Hughes gives the Republicans a 4-3 advantage on the high court in Louisiana. We begin our show with former LSU writer-in-residence David Madden, who moved from his home on Park Boulevard in our community a few years ago with his lovely wife Robbie to the hills of North Carolina. Good morning to you, David Madden.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Baton Rouge.
Well, how are things in North Carolina?
Absolutely paradisial, if that's a word. It seems to me like paradise. Every morning I get up and my back window where I sit to drink coffee shows an incredible range of mountains. So that and many other reasons, we're both very, very happy.
You had a nice view on Park Boulevard, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, out the front door, anyway. The Park Boulevard itself was a very interesting place.
Yes, indeed. Well, you were there for a long time, and you were at LSU for many years, and decided to move away in your late 70s, and you did it. And some things have changed at LSU, and we'll get to your latest work. And David Madden is back with a big book at the age of 79. But among the changes at LSU, there's no longer a U.S. Civil War Center, is there?
Well, yes, there is online, but physically there's no trace as far as I know. But the Civil War Book Review, which is online, is fantastic. It's still unique and very comprehensive. It's a great success. But as you know, generally, I'm very upset with the fact that the U.S. Civil War Center is not what it once was on the national and even international scene. But by the way, I've created a Civil War Center in my hometown, Knoxville. Just got back from a meeting yesterday.
How's that going?
Very, very well. It's flourishing. We're doing all kinds of things. Big plans for mostly East Tennessee, but you know me, I'll probably colonize the surrounding states eventually.
Well, David Madden, who is a celebrated novelist in his own right and has been writing for several decades, was writer in residence at LSU and director of the Creative Writing Program. Hard to fathom, but it's been over 50 years since you wrote The Beautiful Greed in 1961. David
Madden.
Yeah. I see that Philip Roth, who is exactly the same age as you and our friend Ernest Gaines, he's decided to call it a career, says he's through writing.
Yeah, that I felt a good and bad at the same time. I felt, well, I was reminded that most of the people who came out about the time I did, I don't see anymore in the pages of the New York Times or anywhere, but I'm really glad that I've had 6 books out since I left LSU 3 years ago. And I'm deep into 8 other books. The one I'm concentrating on most at the moment is My Intellectual Life in the Army. and you can imagine what that's about. My war with the Army and my war with Senator Joseph McCarthy during the Korean era. So, and as for Ernest Gaines, we were together at San Francisco State College in, it was college then, back in the 50s. We didn't know each other, but we've gotten to know each other pretty well since.
You must have had a good program there.
Yeah, it was, Walter Van Tilburg Clark, who wrote the Oxbow Incident, a movie, classic Western movie made from that novel, was what we all called a very saintly man, but a steely-eyed, very tough guy who threatened to break the arm of the prosecuting attorney at the trial of Ginsburg's Howl if he didn't quit pointing his finger in his face. But he was a really great, wonderful human being, and others, very good people. In fact, Wright Morris came there to teach after I left.
Ernest was a celebrated athlete, a world-class track runner in his day. 440 was a special.
Who was?
Ernest Gaines. So you, you weren't on the track team with Ernest Gaines, were you?
No, I was lagging far behind.
Well, David Madden remains far above the fray in his writing, and his latest is London Bridge in Plague and Fire. Among the endorsements for this book from Winston Groom, of all people, the author of Forrest Gump, he says, "The spellbinding story of the life and times of a world icon. Distinguish yourself and buy it now." Now, this book was one that you worked on for some time, wasn't it?
Maybe 15 years, but then I came out with, I wrote rather quickly, Abducted by Circumstance, which came out in 2010 since I moved here. And that's I would say, my magnum opus, and I'm glad other people are calling it my masterpiece, which is good to hear. And it's really a very strange, very unusual book. I like the contrast between the book before and this book, and I think that's true of most of my works. The next book is very different from the previous book. This one it takes up the building of the bridge in the 12th century and then jumps to plague and fire in the 17th century and how it affected the people living on the bridge. There were 300 houses and shops built right on the bridge. And so the events have to do with the people living there. And they're pretty, some pretty grim pages, but some very lyrical, poetic pages, because my main character is a poet.
Well, for over 2,000 years, London Bridge evolved through many fragile wooden forms until it became the first bridge built of stone since the leaving of the Roman invaders. And in Dave Madden's 10th novel, London Bridge is as much a living, breathing character as its architect, who is a principal character in the book appropriately.
Yeah, and let's say his name. Let the names be given. Peter de Colechurch, a priest, bridge builder, who the people that I meet in London don't know his name. But they do know that London Bridge, in all of its forms until the recent one, was world famous, one of the great wonders of the world. But as one British person said to me who didn't know Peter E. Colechurch, he says, "Well, you know, David, we have so much history here, we can't keep up with it all." And the person who said that was, I think it was in Costa Rica. We were crossing a bridge, one of those swinging bridges. But then on the streets of London, I get the same thing. So I really, one of the main things I wanted to do was bring people's attention to him, and my poet character has the same obsession. And I want to say that among my present projects of that, not of that kind, but of a non-literary kind, is I'm creating a museum just outside Black Mountain, in honor of Rafael Guastavino, who was an incredibly unique and greatly talented textile maker whose work is on view all over the United States, but who has it was forgotten. So the Boston Library, which was its first project, put on an exhibition. So there's an effort underway to bring people's attention to, and I mean, give the name again, Rafael Guastavino came over from Spain. That name, by the way, Guastavino means rotten wine.
David Madden is the guest, and if you'd like to talk with him, 297-5633. He was writer-in-residence for how long at LSU, David?
Well, the term writer-in-residence shifted back and forth because of the director of the United States Civil War Center and other things I was involved in, but my time there was about 42 years, and most of the things I wrote were written, most of the things I published were written there.
42 years, David Madden was at LSU, so that's most of your life, and now you're in Black Mountain, North Carolina. What was the catalyst for moving?
The combination of two things, but the main thing was that my son lives here, and my granddaughter, and he just got married again, so it's an expanded family now, and we wanted to be with him. But then we had visited him here many times, and Black Mountain itself and the whole region around, and Asheville, very, very bohemian place, is an attraction too, Asheville and Black Mountain. So I tell you, every morning we wake up, we just look at each other and wonder, you know, what did we do to deserve this, you know?
Well, we've had a few listeners comment about the budget situation at LSU, and one who asked your opinion regarding what's going on. Are you following the travails in Tigertown?
Well, a little bit. Robbie actually follows events in Baton Rouge generally through forget the name of the paper. Well, the Business Report, and then others. But, yeah, I'm aware of it. I talk with people there, and it's just so sad that most of the time I was there and years after, it's just been an ongoing problem. But I really think it's the lack of imaginative leadership, and you've heard me say this on your program many times, and the handling of the Civil War Center, U.S. Civil War Center, is an example. But the creative writing program is still among the top programs in the nation. And I think it's treated pretty well, but given the fact that it's one of the top, it ought to have even more support. And the English department continue to put out books, and there are other departments doing great things. But it's always, you know, football this, and University of Tennessee is just as bad. And although University of Tennessee is doing pretty well, they just bought all my archive, by the way.
They're not doing very well in football, though.
Do what?
They're not doing well in football, so, you know, you can't have it all.
Yeah. But they are doing pretty well, and I ask them, well, can you all pay what I'm asking for my archives? They say, oh, yeah, we're doing quite well this year. So LSU, I assume, would not be able to say that.
All right, we'll return with David Madden on WRKF after this one-minute pause.
You've heard the headlines. Now find out why they matter. Listen to the Diane Rehm Show for the stories behind the news. You'll hear lively, civil conversations with people in the know. The Diane Rehm Show, answers to questions you want asked. Join us weekdays.
Brought to you by Brian Harris, Porsche Audi.
Weekdays at 10 a.m. on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge.
Support for the Jim Inkster Show provided by Luba Workers' Comp. For over 20 years, Luba has provided workers' compensation coverage to businesses throughout Louisiana and now Arkansas and Mississippi. LubaWC.com. Luba Workers' Comp. Genuine dependability.
And by the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater, presenting The Nutcracker, A Tale from the Bayou, featuring the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra, Saturday and Sunday, December 15th and 16th at 2 and 6. Details at batonrougeballet.org.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. David Madden is our guest, the celebrated novelist who spent 42 years at Louisiana State University. Still writing after all these years, and his latest work is London Bridge and Plague and Fire, a novel from the University of Tennessee Press. Excuse me, Dan and Windermere. Dan, you're on the air with David Madden. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Mr. Madden. I want to know, talking about the Civil War, what do you know of, was it John Bankhead, Colonel John Bankhead?
I'm sorry?
Colonel John Bankhead? He wants to know what you know of Colonel John Bankhead.
Oh, well, not a lot at the moment because I haven't been really keeping up with the Civil War these days. I do review a lot of Civil War books in the Baton Rouge Advocate, but what I did at the Civil War Center was facilitate more than research, although there were areas that I really did research, and that was anything that was totally unusual about the Civil War. I wrote about and facilitated the publication of or reviewed books that dealt with unusual aspects. So that's something I shouldn't try to get into.
877-217-5757. Ernest Gaines calling from Oscar, Louisiana. Good morning, Ernest. You're on with your former classmate.
Hi, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Oh, hi. Hi, David.
Hello, Ernest. Ernie, how you doing?
Good to hear your voice, man.
How are you,
well,
Ernest?
Good to hear yours.
I'm doing okay. I'm also writing, David. I should finish consider a novella sometime early next year. So I'm happy to hear that you're still at it. And
yes, I'm deep into several things. I'm looking forward to your next work.
Ernest, tell us about your work that's forthcoming.
I'm sorry?
The work that you mentioned, the novella.
Yeah, right, yeah. It should be published sometime next year. But I just wanted to say hello to David and heard that he's going to make it a big 8-0 just as I'm going to be a big 8-0 on about a little over a month from now.
Well, I hope we can spend January 15th together, Ernest.
I should hope so, Jim. We've been saying that since I made this 75th birthday.
Well, I hope.
We had pictures taken together.
Well, we got to get together January 15th, hopefully right here on this program at this time.
I should hope so, Jim.
Well, I wasn't exaggerating when I said you were a world-class sprinter in your day.
Well, I think maybe a little bit. I did run pretty well, but I was not what world-class.
What was your time in the 220?
Oh, my time, I broke 21, and I'm in the 440. I only broke about 48, I guess.
48.
Well, yeah, but today you got to run 45, 44, so I wasn't that in this kind of class like this.
Well, at that time, you were among the fastest people in the world, and Ernest Gaines has one of the most agile minds that we have ever witnessed, and thank you for doing your great work, and we're glad you're still doing it. Thank you, Ernest.
Thank you.
I know David's glad to hear from the man he was at San Francisco City College with, Dave Madden.
Yeah, that's really great. That's wonderful to hear from him. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And to know he is writing. His health hasn't been all that great, so I'm glad to know his creativity is still full bore. You know, that's great. I hope to maybe I can review that.
All right.
Novella when it comes out.
A listener, Andy, wants to know if you have retracted your harsh words for Kurt Vonnegut, who would have been 90 years old last month. You said Kurt Vonnegut was a mid-level plotter or something along those lines.
Not really. I have to be honest about it. Not really, but...
not really. You haven't retracted.
It probably wasn't the best occasion, close to his death, to say that, but you did ask me what I thought. And as one of my friends said... David never had a thought he didn't utter. That was lovingly said, but it's not necessarily a virtue. Mm-hmm. But I do try now and then to get deeper into Vonnegut, and it's something I like to do. Anybody I don't particularly like, I make a big effort to like them. And I think there's some letters of his just published, and I tried to read those. I think they were excerpted in the New York Times or somewhere. And I thought, what in the world is supposed to be so great about this compared with the people I'm reading, which at the moment is pretty much classics. I just read George Gissing's wonderful novel, New Grub Street. There's a real mind, which is satirical often. That novel on a very high level. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm making enemies, as when I spoke in New Orleans, not very complimentary way of Thomas Pynchon. But there are other people that I go way out of my way and spend a lot of time and effort praising and promoting.
Kurt Vonnegut is not one. Well, let's move on to some people you like, David Madden. In fact, before I'll mention one of them, your beautiful wife Robbie said that the reason you've had a successful marriage is because you're in love with the same man.
Yeah, well, I don't know how she reaches that conclusion, since I'm one of the most modest persons on the face of the earth, wouldn't you say, Jim?
I would think so, yeah. At least in Black Mountain, North Carolina.
Well, they like that. They like hearing that here too. she spreads it around. Are you about to ask me about Lincoln?
Yeah.
Or somebody
well, no.
Else?
Well, we'll get to Lincoln, but Robert Penn Warren, the founder of the Southern Review.
You liked him,
and he left LSU many moons ago because the university wouldn't give him a modest pay raise. And we let a Pulitzer Prize winner and a man synonymous with LSU, one of the great writers of any time, get away for a few dollars to the University of Minnesota. And yet last week, we opened the coffers and gave Les Miles another $500,000 a year to keep him as football coach. Do we have things in priority at LSU then and now, David Madden?
Well, speaking of satire, I kind of wish Kurt Vonnegut were around to depict all that contrast satirically. He'd probably make a fan out of me, because we do need somebody like him, or like Jonathan Swift, or there aren't many really great satirists. That's one of my problems with Vonnegut. He's not really a satirist. He's a sarcastic. In other words, that's not a word. It's sarcasm. But what we need is really great satire, and that's a great subject you just now posed. I'm almost tempted to deal with it myself because of my great love of Robert Penn Warren. It's just outrageous. But, of course, as you know, when I was at LSU, I put on all kinds of programs, created in honor of him, created a professorship in his name, a room in his name. So LSU... And give the credit to LSU on that LSU has made up for it, I think, in the last 15 years. But you know, his reputation is really not holding strong. All King's Men, absolutely. There's no question, nobody would question the greatness of that novel, one of the 10 greatest American novels. People keep putting it on lists like that. It's on my list. So in a sense, to have one novel like that, when I think of Thomas Mann, I think of The Magic Mountain, when I think of Melville, Moby Dick, the Faulkner, Absalom, Absalom. If you got that one book, and Vonnegut is the now I'm having a senior moment. What's that great Vonnegut novel about the
Slaughterhouse Five? Slaughterhouse Five.
Yeah. That's I need to go back in my continuing effort to make peace with Vonnegut and read that again very carefully.
Well, you also were friends with Norman Mailer. In fact, didn't he name a character after you in Tough Guys Don't Dance?
Yeah, he did. You know, I said to Sarah Goldsmith, I think it was her name. Is that her name? Or year-round?
Her name.
Yeah. I said to her that Kurt Vonnegut, not Kurt Vonnegut, well, Kurt Vonnegut could have written an interesting Civil War novel. I said that Norman Mailer could write the great Civil War novel if only he would. And she interviewed Mailer and told him that. And Mailer said, no, says David Madden's the one to write that one. So that was a nice compliment.
But Tough Guys, he was a very sweet man. Tough Guys Don't Dance didn't have anything to do with the Civil War. But you're in there.
Say it again.
The main character in Tough Guys Don't Dance. His name is Madden.
Yeah.
And I hear it.
Yeah,
I think
I was just thinking of my association with Mailer, not particularly with that book. I don't know why he did that. I guess maybe he just liked the name Madden.
I think he liked you. But before we leave, a few years ago, to be exact, when we celebrated the 200th anniversary of the birth of Abraham Lincoln, you were on this show along with many others, and it was thought by some, I think, that the memory of the 16th president would wane after the 200th anniversary of his birth, but there's more interest in Abraham Lincoln now than ever before, including the movie. What do you make of this?
Well, I think the movie is a national treasure. I think it's great as movie making. I think Daniel Day-Lewis is great in the part. And I think that it's a treasure, a national treasure, because it dramatizes in a breathtaking way, when people are doing almost nothing but talking, the triumph of the democratic process as they worked so hard on one side to pass the 13th Amendment, and on the other side, to give blacks the vote, and on the other side to stop it. And, of course, Reconstruction, they almost undid it because they didn't do what Lincoln wanted to do, using Louisiana as a model in Reconstruction. But, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis in the New York Times, this English actor or Irish actor, said, Lincoln has been mythologized to the point of dehumanization. That infuriated me, and I wrote to the New York Times, and they printed my letter, in which I pointed out that as commissioner of the Abraham Lincoln Bicentennial in Louisiana, giving lectures all over the state, I encountered the fact that Lincoln was very much alive as a very real person. To the people I encountered. And since I've come here, I've continued to give lectures on Lincoln, both in Louisiana and in North Carolina.
Philip in Ponchatoula. Philip, you're on the air with David Madden. Good morning, Philip.
Yes, Mr. Madden mentioned New Grub Street, Gissing's novel about the literary world in London in the 1800s. And it's a very cynical novel. The master manipulator rises to success, and the two artists wind up dead. And I just wonder if he thought that situation still prevails, and if he could name a few obscure writers that should be given attention.
Well, I agree that it's a very cynical novel. But the way I look at that is the fact that he wrote such a long novel and such a rich novel is a creative act that is so positive, that act of creativity is so positive in and of itself that it transcends what it's about. So that no novel, no work of art can really truly be cynical despite its focus on cynical things, because it's a positive work of art. Well, but then, you know, all through it, there's such wit that's not always satirical, but plenty that is, that makes you feel exhilarated as you're thinking of, well, this guy is not that well known anymore as such a wonderful writer. George Meredith is another one we don't read enough of. And these are people I've been reading. Rebecca West is wonderful, a writer who isn't as famous as she should be. And then, of course, my old that I've written about, Wright Morris. I just came out with another book about him. And, you know, people say that James M. Cain, about whom I've written, is not as well known as he should be. But he's another one who, like Lincoln, is coming back into public scrutiny with a movie of Mildred Pierce and the finding of one of his lost manuscripts. And he keeps coming back and back, sliding down and coming back, sliding down and coming back. And I want to point out that much of my creative life, my literary life, has been devoted to writing books and articles about writers.
All right. 297-5633. We have a few more minutes with David Madden. I did want to forward some inquiries from listeners. Sharon asks if you've ever had any of your works made into films, and I know of at least one, Suicide's Wife. Any others?
Just Suicide's Wife, but Bijou, which was my third novel, Crown Publishers said that they never got as many movie inquiries about any book or any novel as they did about that one. But the problem was that Cinema Paradiso came out at about the same time, and they said it's too much like Cinema Paradiso. Mm-hmm. Paradiso, or how you say it. And that killed it. Wow. And then there was great interest in On the Big Wind, and it was about, Pleasure Dome was about con men. And they said, oh, well, we've got this movie, what's the movie with Newman and con men movie with Newman and Redford?
The Sting.
The Sting.
Yeah.
And it was the same guy who wanted to do my novel did The Sting, and when he did The Sting, he said, well, David, we've already done that. So I've not had good luck since The Suicide's Wife.
Well, Angie Dickinson was in The Suicide's Wife.
Yeah, and I have a copy that she inscribed to a friend of hers who was dying of AIDS or something like that. And that's nice to have. Also have Frank Capra's copy of Bijou that I signed to him after he died. They sold all his books, and somehow I found it in a bookstore.
You ended up with
literary life is very interesting.
Your own copy. That is fascinating. Mitch in St. Gabriel. Mitch, you're on with David Madden. Hello.
Hi. I was just wondering if Walker Percy's name might be mentioned in this conversation, or John Kennedy, too.
All right. Well, we were talking about great writers. He mentioned Walker Percy and John Kennedy Toole. Obviously, Walker Percy had a much longer career, and he won the Pulitzer for The Moviegoer.
Yeah, there's a good example of a very fine writer who was once very, very well known. You almost never hear his name anymore. Great writers who slip into obscurity and need to be rediscovered. And usually it's academics who do that.
We'll be back with David Madden and Molly Bookman when we return after this 1 minute pause on WRKF.
You're tuned to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Discover with us. Become a sustaining member and provide continuous support to the news you hear every day at WRKF.org.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation. Clear, straight, open. From NPR News. Weekdays at 1 on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge.
Support for WRKF provided by our members.
And by Archipelago, current upscale men's casual fashion specializing in brands like UGG for men and Zagiri. Archipelago at Town Center next to Cold Stone. Holiday gift ideas and gift cards available. ArchipelagoCollection.com.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with David Madden. His latest novel is London Bridge in Plague and Fire from the University of Tennessee Press. David Madden still writing with Ernest, not Ernest Gaines, but with zeal at the age of 79, now living in Black Mountain, North Carolina. Getting back to what Mitch asked, what about John Kennedy Toole? Did you like Confederacy of Dunces?
Well, I'm in enough trouble with Vonnegut and Thomas Tinson, which is a sort of answer to that question. But I keep trying to read Thomas Tinson, and I keep trying to get back to Vonnegut. And
I asked you about John Kennedy Toole, though.
I know, but I'm trying to get back to John Kennedy O'Toole, and I'm trying to evade your question, so I won't get into more trouble. But I guess I really ought to just say that I have a great deal of trouble reading it. It's just the words. The words don't excite me or interest me. And again, I have the feeling, one way of putting it is, I think it could have been ghostwritten by Kurt Vonnegut, but that's a joke, because of course it wasn't. But O'Toole, ironically, O'Toole.
I think it's Toole. It's Toole. It's not O'Toole. It's Toole.
Well, Toole. I'm thinking of, who's the actor, O'Toole?
Peter O'Toole.
But anyway, Toole is not a forgotten, obscure writer. I mean, that's an enormous bestseller, still is. That's selling thousands and maybe millions of copies and is supporting LSU Press. I'm really grateful for that. LSU Press is one of the great things about LSU. But the satire in Confederacy, it just seems kind of euphoric, and I wish I had read it recently so I could talk more specifically. But just to give you my arrogant opinion, I don't think it's very good, and I think it's Walker Percy who really made it possible. Well, we all know that, but without him, whatever its virtues are, they weren't great enough to get published. I would doubt even LSU Press would have taken it without Walker Percy really pushing it.
Well, and John Kennedy.
Now, see, I'm in trouble again, Jim.
All right, he took his life, didn't he, before the work was published.
That sometimes helps because it brings attention and sympathy to a writer, and I often thought, well, many writers who don't do as well as they should, if only they just decide to do that, maybe that would help it. There's a romance.
Have you ever battled depression?
No, never. Well, yeah. When my girlfriend of 6 years, when I was 18, said she was getting married to somebody else, I went to out of New York City. I was a merchant seaman then, and I was between ships, and I went out of New York City where I was trying to ship out to Ogunquit, Maine. And I went there deliberately to die. Instead, I wrote a play and two short stories.
All right. Well, 60-some years later, David Madden still going strong. And we thank you for joining us today, and we'll talk with you soon, I hope, David. Hope you and Robbie have a great holiday.
Well, it's really great to talk to you and to Baton Rouge again, Jim. I hope we do it again.
Sounds great. Take care. Bye-bye. And we're joined in studio now by Molly Bookman, who for a few years has been in charge at the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater, and it's that time of the year. The Nutcracker presentation is coming in a few days. But Molly is, of course, a person who has myriad interests, including time on the campus at Louisiana State University, and I understand you have taught your last class.
I did. I gave my last final on Friday, and I'm still getting those graded and averaged. I'll turn them in tonight, I hope, and I'll be done at LSU. I went to LSU to teach one dance class. I was hired. There was no dance there at all. I was hired to teach one modern dance class. The next semester, they hired me to teach two classes. And then I was asked to start a dance program. So that's what I did about 15 years ago. I'm retiring with about 30 years in teacher's retirement, but only 15 of those years have been at LSU. And I really wasn't, you know, I kind of went kicking and screaming into the classroom out of the studio. And now I love it very, very much. I've become, you know, really deeply involved in dance history and a lot of the academic areas. And I will miss that, but it's time to move on to other things.
Why are you leaving if you enjoy it so much?
Well, you know, a few years ago, things started looking kind of bleak at LSU. And I, up until that time, I figured I would probably stay there forever because I do love the program there. But as there were cuts made, and some of the cuts were to the adjunct, not to my position, but to the adjunct dance teachers, it just appeared that this was not a place. You know, I just started thinking about if I couldn't look forward to time at LSU, what could I look forward to? And I thought of a lot of other things, and it just put in my head that maybe when I get to that magic time when I will have a retirement pension, maybe it would be time to take it. So things are looking better at LSU. The theater department is a wonderful place to be, and I'm sure that they will hire someone wonderful who will, as the budget cuts subside and things move forward, will move the dance program in a great direction.
Well, are you upset with any politicos regarding the budget cuts?
Of course. Of course. You know, I'm not, I think that higher education should not be something that is so easily on the chopping block. But I'm not a terribly political person. So I'm, you know, I wish Bobby Jindal would stay out of state, as most people wish he would get back here and take care of business. I'm happy for him. I'm, you know, not a big fan, but
So you think it's his fault?
No, of course not. But it is the mood. It was the mood of the country for a while. You know, when you look at when I was little, I remember going to Austin, Texas. It was very much like Baton Rouge. It was a kind of sleepy, really, mm-hmm. Capital city. But investment was made into UT Austin, and it became a huge mega university that, you know, is one of the tops in the country. People invested in that, and that has, you know, that has helped the state, that has helped the city, that has helped the country. And we have to make investments in things if we're going to make things work.
Well, when I say his fault, he as the governor has to make decisions, either to raise taxes or make budget cuts. And then when the cuts come, he has to decide where. And LSU has taken a significant cut over the last several years. Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying. Do you blame him for the strategy as far
as
balancing the budget?
Of course. And that's all I have to say. Of course. Of course I do. I'm. But he doesn't work in a vacuum. He just sort of leads the direction. So I don't really, like I said, I'm not really well-versed in everything that goes on. But I wish we had a governor who really put emphasis on higher education.
Well, other people are leaving LSU, as they occasionally do. Academia is such that people do come and go. But what's the mood on campus right now?
You know, in my department, the mood is great because in the theater department, it's all about creativity. It's all about, you know, they're the last people to leave at night. There are always people in our building, always working, always doing something wonderfully creative. But of course, what we hear from across the street is that the mood is pretty bad and people are leaving. I've had some good friends from other departments take jobs at other universities because the mood was not good for them. But like I said, I feel like we're bottoming out and we're going to start getting better. And you know, these cuts that have hit LSU hit other universities in other states a couple of years before us. We were doing well when it was happening there. Now it's been happening here. And I really believe that we're going to get better.
Well, things will be much happier come Saturday and Sunday. at the Baton Rouge River Center at the Theater for Performing Arts. What will be happening?
This is the happiest time of the year in Baton Rouge, and certainly at the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater and the Baton Rouge River Center, because we are doing The Nutcracker, A Tale from the Bayou. We will do it five times, once for school children on Thursday, and then we'll do four public performances this weekend at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. There are lots of seats left, and there are always seats left because the River Center is so large, so you can get seats even right up until showtime. But this is a Nutcracker that is special to Louisiana, and everyone who sees it talks about, and people who've seen it all over the world and all over the country talk about how special this is, and that's why we're able to keep doing it year after year, and that's why we want to do it, because it really is a magical present for the city of Baton Rouge.
Molly Buchman of the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater. This Saturday and Sunday at the River Center, 2 p.m. and 6 p.m., The Nutcracker, A Tale from the Bayou. How many years now?
I think 21. But you know, this is like our fourth year with the Baton Rouge Symphony accompanying us, and that has made been a great plus for the performance. And we also have new guest artists this year coming from the Boston Ballet. We have Carlos Molina and Corinna Gill. And he's danced here once before, and we've tried to get him back ever since. So we're very excited about the two of them. We have some exquisite young dancers. And, you know, these are young dancers who are young athletes as well as artists. And I would love to see the city of Baton Rouge give them some of the support that they give to our young athletes. These kids are not going to see their names in the paper. They're not going to be featured on the 10 o'clock news. They're not going to get big contracts with the NFL. But they are still putting in just as much time. There's just as much deep heat, icy hot, and muscle relaxers at the ballet as at any gym.
Well, and dancers generally are in much better shape than our football players.
Studies often show that. Studies often rate professional dancers and professional basketball players at the very high end of the physical fitness
test. Certainly is aerobic exercise, no doubt about it. And you don't find many 375-pound dancers on stage.
Not a lot. Not a lot. And those muscles are so finely honed. You know, we have some injuries right now, just like the LSU football team. We also have some players, first string players, who are not there because of injuries. But our young recruits will go in. They will perform just as well as the ones at LSU did. And we would really like to see these young artists and athletes get some more support from the community.
You put many months into this preparation. What about the cast? Who are the principals in this year's cast?
Well, Leonard Augustus, whom everyone knows in Baton Rouge.
He's an athletic guy.
Oh, absolutely. He's a beautiful dancer, and he is our Drosselmeyer, surrounded by a cast of great adults who are not necessarily ballet dancers. But we also have some great local professional ballet dancers like Rebecca Matthews, Christine Perkins, and I hate to start naming them because you know I don't have a list in front of me, so I can't name everyone. Laura Catalanello, Natalie Knight, Jonna Cox. These are gorgeous dancers who go on to other things. They have other careers, but they have this huge investment and training. We have among our professional dancers, we have mothers, we have an accountant, we have a physician's assistant, mm-hmm. We have teachers, we have people who do all this full time, but they still spend all this time every night and all day Saturday and Sunday at the studio because they love what they do and they have a great gift that they can share with us.
Well, more than 300 performers, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are the children 8 to 13 who come from around the city and even outside the city, and this is their opportunity to be on stage in a really professionally produced production with a symphony, with big house full of admiring mm-hmm. fans.
Will Tim Muffet be there?
He is not conducting. David Torrens is conducting.
Well, that's certainly a good choice as well. Mm-hmm. But it is a holiday time, and Molly Buchman works during the holidays and has for many, many years. And this has become one of the fixtures and one of the great highlights of December in Baton Rouge, The Nutcracker, A Tale from the Bayou, this Saturday and Sunday, 2 p.m., 6 p.m., performances at the River Center Theater for the Performing Arts. If you'd like more information, 225-766-8379. That's 766-8379. Usually we talk about this on November 22nd.
Oh, well, sometimes.
That was Thanksgiving this year.
It was Thanksgiving this year.
And yeah. Molly shares her birthday with the death date of the 35th American president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who died 49 years ago. And you and I are old enough to remember that day.
Yes, I do. Baton Rouge Junior High, Miss St. Dizier's class.
And amazingly, in some pockets of the South, unfortunately, in some places in Louisiana, maybe in some places in this city, people were actually happy about the death of a president.
I witnessed that, yes. In Miss St. Dizier's class, it was very somber, but we could hear kids in the hall cheering, happy that it had happened. And another teacher came in, and what I remember is Miss St. Dizier and this other teacher lamenting the fact that there were people out there happy about this. That made a huge impression on me, and I have remained a loyal Democrat ever since.
Really? That yes. made you a loyal Democrat?
No, that didn't do it. That didn't do it, but it certainly helped.
Well, the president won, John Kennedy did, here in Louisiana in 1960 over Richard Nixon, mm-hmm. but a year later, Lyndon Johnson got smashed in Louisiana by Barry Goldwater. And so we've talked about politics at LSU. Now let's talk about politics on a grand scale. Molly Bookman, President Kennedy, was a charismatic guy, wasn't he?
I can't
imagine anybody, even people who disagreed with him politically, cheering about him dying, but it happened. I know it happened.
And I was very young and impressionable, and that 1960 convention was the first one I ever remember paying attention to, and I remember being huddled around the television and, you know, all the people with the placards voting for Kennedy, and we really did have the sense of that Camelot era ahead of us.
Would have been a little different if Richard Nixon had won that election. Nixon, by the way, turns 100 years old, wherever he may be, next month on the 13th, actually the 9th day of January, in Yorba Linda, California. That's where he was born. I went to his museum last year, and they said, you know, we don't have a whole lot of folks come around here from the media.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but there is still this fascination with Camelot, and there is fascination with the Nutcracker, and this is an opportunity to see it this weekend at the River Center. Once again, that number, 766-8379. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.